This podcast is part of the Red 5 Network. For more Red 5 Network podcasts, visit red5network.com.
So what I told you was true, from a certain point of view.
Hello there, everyone out in the galaxy. Whether you're watching us live or listening later, this is From a Certain Point of View, and we are on episode 41. I am Josh.
And that makes me Adam.
Adam, are you excited to talk about the Empire Strikes Back today?
I am. This is an Empire-filled week for me, so I am very ready to chat Empire. I was telling you before we went live, I'm a little more ready for this than I was for A New Hope, so...
Very good, very good. I know this week the news was a little light, so we're definitely the major focus of this episode will be The Empire Strikes Back. Thank the maker. But what have you been watching and playing this week?
I read a lot of, like I said before, I read a lot about Empire this week. So that was my main part of my week, I think. Last Saturday night after the show, I hung out with the Force Losers, which is another Red 5 Network podcast, and we had some fun talking about Power Rangers. So that was a pretty cool, pretty cool night with them. That's on their YouTube channel, and it should be on their, audio podcasts, soon. So that was a good time. And then last night got to hang out with, some more of the Red 5 crew, and hung out with Ro from Scarif Scuttlebutt. I hung out with let's see if I can remember everybody, Pat and, Charlie from, Pat and Charles from, geez almighty, Conversations, Alex from Salty Nerd, and, Justice from, Pod Wars. So that was a blast hanging out on the Red 5 Network. We just talked about everything last night. It was just a hangout night. So
nice. Awesome.
What have you been up to this week, Josh?
Well, I mean, I was doing some remodeling around the house. So there was a lot of time spent on that. But when I got a chance to, I watched The Dark Knight late last week, and then this week was The Dark Knight Rises. Rewatching those in 4K. I actually got them on 4K a while ago, but never got around to watching them until recently. So I was enjoying some Dark Knight and Dark Knight Rises. Two of I think the trilogy itself is one of those near perfect trilogies out there. And like you said last week, I think the Dark Knight Rises is pretty underrated.
Yeah.
I also continued my Ozark binge, and I'm into season two now. So I continue to watch that. Not a lot of Star Wars this week for me, actually, but I'll get into a little bit of a story when we get into our main segment about Star Wars. So, yeah, we also had a poll this week, or more than a poll. It was really a kind of a question of the week. And the question was, you know, I was thinking back, you know, you and I have shared our stories about A New Hope a couple times, I think, on the podcast, just our first memory watching it on VHS at our grandparents' houses and everything. So I wanted to put that out to our audience and ask them, what is your first memory of seeing A New Hope? And we had a lot of good responses. Cam Ray said, you know, the memories are kind of a blur because he was so young, but they were viewed repeatedly on VHS tapes, and buying new ones anytime new versions of the films came out. And yeah, I mean, Star Wars has really milked all their various versions of the films over the years, for sure. RFB said, you know, kind of that opening sequence when the stormtroopers and Vader, you know, enter the Tantive V4, and, you know, just that whole opening sequence. That Tatooine Times said seeing the special edition in theaters in 97. I know for me that I didn't see A New Hope in theaters. I kind of watched it on VHS, and then I saw Empire and Return of the Jedi in theaters on that re-release. Force Losers said watching it with my dad. I'm 92% certain this was my face from start to finish. And it's Poe from Kung Fu Panda. his mouth hanging wide open. So we had a lot of nice responses out there about first memories from A New Hope, as that was our main topic last week. So any thoughts on our question of the week this week?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's hard to like actually even remember. You know, I think I've said before, like my first memory of Star Wars is actually Jedi. For some reason, just the way my brain has remembered it. So,
right.
But yeah, I think my first memories, I mean, it's definitely on VHS tapes, you know, sitting in front of a TV. So,
for sure.
Yep.
Good memories. Yeah. It's one of those things where, you know, it's something that just kind of grabs you as a kid with kind of, when you're younger, your imagination just goes wild and you're very open-minded and just ready to take in something like that. And, can you tell us what's coming up on today's show?
Yeah. Just a couple of news topics this week, nothing major, but, we have some stuff we want to touch base on, talk about real quick in news. And then it's mostly going to be Empire after that. This is going to be a pretty Empire heavy show as we get into the fifth in our Thank the Maker series, which is going to be Empire Strikes Back.
All right. Well, let's dive into our news segment.
Well, you want the bad news or the really bad news?
Okay. So first up, we had the Disney Plus, they kind of debuted this behind the scenes special of Star Wars Galaxy's Edge that had actually debuted, I think, last September, possibly around that time. And it was just kind of the first look into Galaxy's Edge, where they interviewed some different celebrities and different celebrities visited Galaxy's Edge and kind of gave their thoughts about it and everything. And Neil Patrick Harris, I think, was one of them. And there were a few others as well. I remember watching this back when it first released, when it was actually on TV.
Was this an ABC special?
Yeah, it was like an ABC special, I think. But I think I'm going to revisit this, you know, now that my Galaxy's Edge trip is coming up in about a month now. I'm sure that'll get me pumped up for it. I started watching a little bit of it last night, but it was pretty late at that point. So I went to bed.
Yeah. It's cool. Yeah. Putting some of this stuff on. I mean, they've done they've put a lot of the ABC specials on there. So it's cool that the Adventure Awaits ended up on Disney Plus too. So I didn't see it on TV when it first aired. So I definitely want to check that out.
Yeah. It's a nice look at the park and everything and the different experiences. And they even, you know, kind of talk about the app that you can download, that you can interact with inside the park with the app and everything. Pretty cool stuff. So next up in gaming news, we have Vader Immortal, which is coming to PlayStation VR. Now, before it was exclusively on the Oculus, but now it's coming to PlayStation VR. So if you have one of those, you can pick this up on August 25th. And they also, ILMX Lab also debuted a brand new trailer for this release, and that can be found on YouTube as well. So I don't have an Oculus or PlayStation VR, but man, I'd like to at this point with some of these releases that are coming to, you know, I'm sure the Galaxy's Edge one that's coming out might also.
Now, the Galaxy's Edge one, that's only Oculus to start off, right?
Right. I believe so. But I'm wondering if the same thing will happen with that as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
And finally, in book and comic news, an excerpt from Thrawn Ascendancy Chaos Rising was released. Have you read this one, Adam? I know sometimes with these excerpts, you kind of stay away from them. So, yeah.
I mean, the book's coming out in a month. I mean, I don't know. I just want to wait.
May as well just wait at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say I like that IGN did a blue background with white print. It was wasn't very easy on the eyes, I didn't think so, but it's just kind of cool that they did that
That's cool. Yeah, a little nod.
Nod, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. So, yeah, I'm still.
Yeah, I didn't check it out, but.
Yeah,
can't wait for that book.
Again, I'm so behind with Thrawn. I mean, I know Thrawn from Rebels, that's about the extent of my Thrawn experience.
I don't think you'll need to have read the Thrawn trilogy from a few years ago. So I don't think you'll need to have read that, but
okay.
Could be wrong. So
yeah. Where does this one take place in the timeline? Is it like sort of a prequel type thing?
From what I understand, it's a prequel because he's still in the Chiss Ascendancy at that point. Okay. So
yeah, so maybe I could start with that one then. And then read the other ones eventually.
Someone chat can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's a prequel to this.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those things where it's like, oh, there's so many of these, like it's such a daunting task for me to start now, you know what I mean? But, if it's one that goes back before everything else, then maybe I can pick it up and read it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that actually wraps it up for the news this week. Like I said, it's a very light news week, but we have a very heavy Star Wars Empire Strikes Back Thank the Maker edition discussion coming right up.
Thank the Maker. This oil bath is going to feel so good.
Okay. Like I said, I spent a lot of time reading about Empire this week. Mainly that came from another J.W. Rinzler book. I mentioned him last week, and this week I'll do the same thing. I read his Making of the Empire Strikes Back, which is very, very much in the similar vein to the Making of Star Wars that I mentioned last week. Again, I bought this on an ebook format. I think it was like $6 or $7. It was pretty cheap. But really deep, really great information, all kinds of cool video snippets, behind the scenes clips and audio interviews, great pictures, really good information. So check that out. I got it on Kindle. I think it's also on iTunes and Google Play. If you're looking for, I mean, the ebook version is just fantastic. So great ebook. I also listened to a little bit of the audio commentary, which I'd listened to a few weeks before, so I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to that. But since we talked about most of those points a few shows ago, but that was audio commentary with George Lucas, Irving Kirshner, Carrie Fisher, Ben Burtt, and Dennis Muren. And then you checked out Conversation with the Masters.
Yeah, here's where my story comes in. So, yes. So last night, you know, normally when I watch anything, it's usually upstairs in my little hangout area that has the 4K TV and the surround sound and all that good stuff. But last night Sydney was up late and she was down in the living room, and I was like, okay, maybe I'll just pop this in down here in the Blu-ray player in the living room. And I went up, got the Blu-ray for Empire Strikes Back, and I haven't used this Blu-ray player downstairs in the living room in years. So I put the disc in, and it's like, it says it's loading, and it pops up, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to get to watch this down here. I hit some button on my remote by accident, because first of all, I was struggling to, there was no batteries in the remote, and I needed two AAA batteries. So I got the Roku remote, took the batteries out of that, but I couldn't get the second battery out. It was like jammed in there. I'm like slamming it off of things, trying to get this battery out, and I finally got it out. Put the batteries in the Blu-ray remote, because again, I haven't used this Blu-ray player in years. And I hit some button accidentally and it turns off. So I'm like, okay. So I turn it back on, and then it just says load on the little screen. And then my TV's telling me there's no input signal. So I try to eject the disc, because I'm like, I'm going to go upstairs and watch it, I guess. So I try to eject it. It doesn't come out. Like, the Blu-ray player ate The Empire Strikes Back. So I don't know if I'm ever going to get it out of there. So I had to go on Disney Plus, and I'm like, what special features do they have on Disney Plus for The Empire Strikes Back? And they had this Conversation with the Masters. So it was about 10 years ago, I think, they were kind of revisiting Empire and talking with, you know, George Lucas and Irving Kirshner and everything. So
Yeah. I have a similar story. I have a Foo Fighters CD that's stuck in a car stereo, and I kept the car stereo because I had to change it out. And I kept the car stereo because that car stereo still has my Foo Fighters CD in it. I want that back. And one of those days, I'm going to figure out how to get back. It's been in there for probably about 6 or 7 years now. But one of these days, I'm going to free my Foo Fighters CD from that stupid car stereo.
Yeah, I got to get Empire out of that thing because I need it.
Yeah. So anyway.
So that was the extent of my of what I could do last night.
That's a tragedy, man.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wanted to start off with this quote by Harrison Ford. He said, "What Star Wars accomplished," speaking of the first one, "what Star Wars accomplished is really not possible, but it's done it anyway. Nobody rational would have believed that there is still a place for fairy tales. There is no place in our culture for this kind of stuff, but the need was there, the human need to have the human condition expressed in mythic terms." Mm-hmm. And that's such a deep quote from Harrison.
Deep. I was just going to say, that's deep stuff right there. Cause
really deep stuff. I mean,
normally you don't get that kind of a quote from Harrison. No, you know what I mean?
Right. Right.
He can be grumpy sometimes.
Yeah. A little grouchy. But man, really deep stuff about no place in culture for fairy tales anymore. But apparently there is, you know, apparently we need that.
Again, I think it, just like I said last week, it really comes down to that hero's journey story, that coming of age story, using those mythological themes, and, you know, good versus evil and the, you know, all those things. And we're going to talk in a little bit about, you know, just Yoda's role and how that ties back into mythology as well and everything. So I think having those essential elements kind of pulls people in.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't know this. Did you know that ILM actually ceased to exist in June 1977? So the month after.
I read that in the notes and I was like, well, it must have made a comeback or something.
Yeah, so basically there wasn't a single employee left on the payroll the month after the release of Star Wars. So a lot of their equipment had been rented out and borrowed out. And the people were working on some different projects. But I didn't know that, you know, it was kind of, you know, I don't think it was ever really going to be one and done, but it was kind of like, you know, movie's done, move on to other stuff. Mm-hmm. And, but then, you know, of course we're getting the band back together in some ways or another. But early outlines of the movie had George kind of looking at ways to hide the, you know, Mark Hamill's going to look different in this movie because of what happened to him. In actually January 77 before Star Wars came out. So, and he actually wasn't available for some shots for A New Hope because of that, because he was hurt so bad. Hmm. Hamill actually even at one point asked George if he would have ever considered recasting Luke if, you know, Mark had not survived that accident. And George said he wouldn't have, that he would have, there would have been a script change and there would have actually been a long lost brother or something. And the Force would have been with that one, with that person.
Yeah. Yeah. That would, wow. I mean, it's just like, for me, it's just like Carrie Fisher, like you couldn't recast her, in my opinion. I don't think that was ever an option that JJ was going to consider. And it's just, I think it would be, I mean, you have your main character, your hero of the story, recasting, I just don't think would have worked, you know? So I see where he's coming from.
Yeah, definitely. Lucas actually financed most of this movie on his own. Fox ended up distributing it. I mean, you know, there were loans, and we'll talk about some bank loans and stuff in a little bit. But Fox basically distributed it. He actually struck up a deal with Fox where he actually pretty much had creative control of this. The license, the characters were his, which probably wasn't very common, you know. And parts of that deal are mainly what ended up with Alan Ladd eventually leaving Fox. Which happened during the production of this movie, which came as a surprise to them. He was, you know, kind of their, overseer saving grace, I guess, on the board of Fox. But he actually ended up getting forced out during this movie. You know, George had creative control, Fox distributing it, which gave him a lot more freedom about what he wanted to do this time around.
Yeah, I'm sure that played into him kind of funding it himself, you know, just the ability to have that creative control and that freedom to do what he wanted with it. You know,
definitely. George was very worried about how kids would perceive this movie. Some of his earliest notes on the movie are about the psychology of children. And then I found this quote really cool. George says, if he wasn't a filmmaker, I think I might be a toy maker. I love making kids happy.
Mm-hmm. Just, yeah, I mean, it's always at the forefront of his mind, I think, is, you know, the intentions behind his films being for young people, young and kids, you know. And this is a dark film. This is a darker film in the series, you know. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's fascinating that he was kind of looking at the child psychology and how this would impact. I think he even mentioned in that documentary I was watching that he kind of asked, you know, some experts in the field about how kids would react to even the reveal that Vader was Luke's father. And I think the response he got was, well, if they can handle it, they'll be fine. And if they can't handle that, or if that's too hard to handle, they'll just think that Vader was lying to Luke. And he's just being deceitful because he's the bad guy, which is kind of reminded me of Kylo Ren and what he said to Rey at the end of The Last Jedi and everything as well.
Yeah, definitely. And then you mentioned the tone of the movie. That was something that Kirshner was worried about too, was getting the tone right. You know, he said that was a lot like a quality. You don't really qualify, you know, quality, and then tone is another thing that's hard to qualify. So,
right. Yeah. I think they absolutely nailed the tone. I mean, I think it's such a balance of so many different things you want in a film. That's why Empire Strikes Back has always been my favorite film, because I think it has everything you want out of a film. You know, it has the awesome action. It has a love story. It has a lot of comedy in it, even though it's a darker film. There's a lot of you know, good laughs in the film and everything. And that dynamic between Han and Leia for sure is create some of those laughs. And then you have the whole mythology and the religious aspects of the Force and everything. And then you have that big twist at the end. So I think they just kind of nailed it.
Yeah. So now we're getting into some story stuff. Story conferencing, actually, the initial writer on this movie is Lee Brackett. Lee Brackett did a bunch of, a lot of like pretty popular sci-fi stuff, you know, back prior to Empire, prior to Star Wars, even, you know, even back into the decades prior. So she was actually brought on to write this film. Story conferencing began with her in November of 77. So just 6 months after, you know, Star Wars was in theaters. Some early ideas, which I thought were cool, included a trip to the Wookiee planet, meeting the Emperor, and then finding a rogue gambler from Han's past. So a lot of Lee's stuff didn't make this movie, but and they'll say, some people say, you know, it was almost totally changed from what she had written, but a lot of her things survive, you know.
Yeah, I mean, those
two that I mentioned, you know, meeting the Emperor and meet the gambler, being Lando, right?
Yeah, sure.
So some of those ideas do survive. And I believe Lucas actually still wanted to give her a partial writing credit on this film too. You know, just because and we'll find out later. She was sick when she wrote this draft. She actually passed away not long after that. So, you were going to say something before I move on to some other stuff that she had.
Oh, no, I was just going to say about how a couple of these ideas still stuck in the end, you know, with our kind of introduction to the Emperor, even though it was kind of through that, you know, hologram image and everything, but,
right.
And then Lando being that rogue gambler.
Yeah. Some other ideas, and we talked about this not too long ago, but Han actually originally had some powerful family. You know, he wasn't just a pirate, a smuggler. Mm-hmm. He had a powerful stepfather that was the head of the transportation union. And I think George said it would have made him, like, if you're ranking them, the fifth most powerful figure in the galaxy. Mm-hmm. So Han got himself, so you actually would have gotten some backstory on Han, that he was actually raised on the Wookiee planet. So, you know, kind of grew up around Chewie, which would have been how they met. So, you know, stuff like that didn't make it, but right. Interesting ideas nonetheless. So then this is all from Lee Brackett's draft. So,
yeah, and I think actually, there George Lucas thought about using the Wookiee planet in Return of the Jedi, but then ended up going with Endor and the Ewoks, and it being more of a, mm-hmm.
right.
a struggle of a battle, you know, like kind of that, just using the natural elements, you know, sharpened sticks, bows and arrows, ropes, and to take down an empire. You know what I mean? Just, I think the kind of the theme behind that was important to George as well. And, yeah. and maybe why it ended up going that way.
Yeah. So like I said, Lee's draft really got changed pretty drastically. She was very, you know, George gave her a treatment. She was very faithful to that, but the dialogue just didn't fit right. You know, mm-hmm. it didn't feel like it needed to with some of the, with most of the characters. Lucas actually went back to her to talk to her about it, but she had actually already been hospitalized at that point, and she, like I said, passed away from cancer in March of 78. So Lucas at that point begins working on the second draft, but as we know, Lawrence Kasdan eventually joins this movie. He had actually worked with Lucas on Raiders of the Lost Ark earlier that month.
He made some great contributions in the writing of these Star Wars films. I mean, Empire, he wrote for Return of the Jedi too, right? And then Force Awakens.
I believe so, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Irvin Kershner actually wanted an Irvin Kershner film at the front of the movie, but you know, Lucas was pretty firm about sticking to the company logos and then the crawl. So that could have looked a little different, but it didn't, yeah. as we know. You know, that didn't make it, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think the opening of Star Wars has such a unique feel, where it doesn't recognize anybody until after, you know what I mean? There's no credits, you know, kind of beforehand. And I think that lends itself to you just really being immersed in this galaxy, you know, cause you just see a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And then you get the crawl mm-hmm. and you're right in to the story. And so, you know, I like how it has the credits at the end and everything like that. And I'm glad they stuck with that.
Yeah, same. Much later, some of that actually got George Lucas into some disagreements with the Directors Guild.
Mm-hmm.
You know, putting yeah. that stuff towards the end. And right. They actually tried to find him, and then he resigned from the guild. So,
there you go.
But yeah. You know, that's just another example of him being ahead of his time, because you don't see that anymore with
right.
credits and directors, all that at the front mm-hmm. of the movie. You know, everything is a credits roll now.
Yeah, I think he was always an innovator, you know, and mm-hmm. it always took a little bit for the rest of the industry to catch up to what George was doing, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Boba Fett's actually an early version of Darth Vader, which was a hired gun character that often appears in Japanese films. You know, we talked about the Kurosawa stuff last week. Mm-hmm. So Boba Fett's actually based on that early version of Vader. Those were movies that, you know, we talked about that inspiring Lucas. It also inspired Kasdan too. So,
yeah.
Go ahead.
I think that, you know, even though Boba Fett doesn't have a large role in these films, his role was going to be even smaller. Like, he was just supposed to be just bounty hunter at one point, but then they, you know, they went with Boba Fett, and because he looked so cool and everything, George said they included him in more of the film, and especially Return of the Jedi, in that opening in the first act, you know?
Yeah, right. Early storyboards actually called this movie Episode 2. The opening crawl of A New Hope didn't have an episodic number. That was something they, you know, kind of waffled back and forth about what they were going to do and decided to take it out. So this was for a while, you know, referred to as Episode 2. And then, you know, later was changed to Episode 5. There's a lot of questions about starting at 4. You know, how would that work with an audience? You know, how would they feel about missing the first three parts of the story?
Right.
But, you know, it worked in some way, I guess.
Yeah.
It didn't cause too much confusion.
Because I wonder at what point did George realize this is actually the middle of the story? You know, at what point was he cognizant of the fact that he wanted to go back and tell the first three episodes at some point? Yeah. And I wonder how early on that was.
He says during the first one that he wrote this stuff during A New Hope. Mm-hmm. And, you know, came up with the idea for the prequels, how Darth Vader came to be and all that stuff. But I don't know how much of that is hindsight, you know, because there definitely seemed to be some going back and forth from what I read on, you know, what number episode this would be. So,
yeah.
I don't know. June 5th, 1978 is when kind of a pretty big day. This is the day that Lawrence Kasdan was officially added to the crew. But then it's also the day that Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill sign up for Empire and the third movie. They actually also signed on for Star Wars 4, which would have been the one after
episode, you know,
not what we know as 4. Right. But it would have been the one after episode 6. So, you know, there was an option there to continue it, which never happened. Right. Harrison Ford, as we know, only signed for Empire at this point. So at this point in time, we know that Harrison is on this movie, but he's out of the major three. He's the one that's not signed to come back for 6 yet.
Right.
So let's get into some, you know, talk about some characters and some behind the scenes stuff. Let's start with Yoda, because Yoda was an interesting story in this movie.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Originally, Obi-Wan was actually going to train Luke. Yoda didn't exist, but George decided to kill Obi-Wan, you know, late in episode 4. And, you know, we needed a mentor at that point.
Yep.
Some of the early ideas for Yoda were very interesting. He had this Minch, almost like gnome type character. There were some really weird ideas too. There was actually an idea about dressing up a monkey, but a monkey couldn't be trained. And it couldn't really effectively get words out of it. And then they found out that the monkey would just kind of tear away at his costume the whole time. So,
right.
But they needed something because there's, you know, this tradition in mythological storytelling of having a seemingly insignificant creature meet the hero who becomes a guide to the hero. So needed.
Yeah. Something. I think that's the most fascinating part of it for me was how it ties. I love how the mythology ties into the films and just having that kind of guide, because, you know, Obi-Wan's the guide in A New Hope that you see in mythology, but then you have this kind of creature that's kind of, maybe small or seems insignificant, and, you know, Yoda begins Empire very silly, like kind of playing a role that he's not, you know, this great Jedi master, that he's just some creature that's going to eat his food and bother him and annoy him and everything. But then you find out that he's actually the Jedi master that Luke was looking for the whole time. So I love that take on it, on the character. And I think they also, in the documentary I watched last night, they get into a lot of Yoda's backward speak, you know, the way he talks and everything. And originally Lawrence Kasdan didn't, well, I mean, the stuff George wrote for Yoda, Lawrence Kasdan was just like, this is just garbage. Like, what is this? Why is he talking like this? But and Lucas admitted, he's like, you know, I'm not really the best writer. You know, he admits to that. But Lawrence Kasdan was able to write it in a way that made sense and still use that form of backward speech and everything, and really made it work.
Yeah. So then, you know, the question comes up, what's he going to look like? And Kirshner originally didn't think Muppets would work at all. And actually, it wasn't just Kirshner. You know, even Lucas had a lot of doubts about how Muppets would work. Kirshner mm-hmm. had just said, you know, up close, they just don't look real enough. And he went on to say that, you know, they're just a piece of cloth and ping pong balls. I mean, they are. And, you yeah. know, you remember at that point, you know, what we know as Muppets were things like, you know, Kermit, which were Kermit, very, just yeah. basically cloth, and mm-hmm. the Sesame Street characters, mm-hmm. things like that. It wasn't this much more realistic creature right. that ended up coming out of this. So, so Yoda is designed by Stuart Freeborn. I have a picture in the notes here that I'll include in the show notes.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that. It's
some say it's that remarkable. Yoda actually, yeah, some say that Yoda mm-hmm. actually looks a lot like his creator, and
absolutely
he does. He does. He mm-hmm. looks. There's yeah. a very strong resemblance there to Stuart Freeborn, which is pretty funny. Jim Henson, you know, George Lucas brought him in to, you know, kind of talk about this and see how they can make this happen. Henson offered up Frank Oz as his best Muppeteer at that point. But then, you know, and we'll talk about the design of Dagobah in a little bit, but, you know, scenes with Yoda just had to be planned around him being a Muppet.
The movements there had to be space for
him to move around. Right. There had to be space for him to yeah. move around because there had to be holes in the set, you know, so that Frank Oz could be below and using the puppet above. Yeah. So that really affected a lot of how they made that set.
And yeah. And, you know, I know that in the prequels, George Lucas wanted to use Yoda in such a way to show that he was this master and this warrior. So they couldn't really use puppetry and everything, and they had to go CGI. But I still think that this version of Yoda in Empire Return of the Jedi looks the best out of any Yoda that they've used in any of the films, whether it was Last Jedi or the prequels. I just think that he just stands the test of time and looks incredibly realistic. And I just think they did a phenomenal job with that character.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't mind CGI Yoda. I definitely prefer this puppet though, versus mm-hmm. what was used in episode yeah. one originally. And then episode 8, but this mm-hmm. puppet, I think, was the best version of, oh, of yeah. that puppet. So let's talk about Dagobah while we're here. Dagobah had to be constructed actually in just 7 weeks instead of 14. So there was a lot of long nights and overtime and weekends there. Here's some stats for you. Dagobah consists of 112 tons of plaster, 23 or 24 trees, which are 4 to 5 tons each. And then that was all put into an area that was 65 by 45 feet with 3 foot deep water. And this was all created, you know, they made this bog. But then it was just interesting because the bog itself kind of came alive. You know, they brought in some animals to inhabit it. You know, we see mm-hmm. the lizards and snakes and stuff. They said some snakes actually got away and started to inhabit other parts of the set.
yeah, no, thank you.
But then birds and bugs would actually come in from outside and start living in there too, you know? So it kind of just came alive on its own. And when you look at that set, it doesn't feel like a set, you know? Mm-hmm. It feels like a swamp.
Right.
So I think that what they made there was pretty remarkable, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the documentary I was watching last night too, they kind of focused in on the part where Yoda lifts the X-Wing out of the water with the Force. And I guess like the first time they tried to do it, like, because the X-Wing wasn't made out of very like sturdy materials at that point, like one of the wings fell off when they were trying to lift it out. And George just was calm and everything. And he just stood there and didn't say anything. And, you know, they reworked it and put it back together and they're able to get a good shot. So,
yeah. So let's move on to Hoth. Let's talk about Norway. They had their, of course, when, you know, you film a movie, that's when it's going to get rough. But they had their coldest winter in 100 years there, which led to multiple issues. They filmed this in high winds and blizzards and everything else. So one of the main issues with having to do that is that acetate film becomes brittle in cold weather. So they had to load that frozen film into the camera with howling winds and all this other stuff. It was rough.
Yeah.
The camera lenses had to be kept cold, you know, so that the snow wouldn't hit them and then melt instantly. But the body of the camera actually had to be kept warm because the film had to roll through it.
Right.
So they couldn't do that through a cold camera. And then, if that wasn't enough, if you touched the camera without gloves on, your hand would freeze to the camera and you'd actually have to take a razor blade and slice off the end of that skin to get your hand off the camera.
That sounds miserable.
It wasn't fun. If I ever had any fantasies about being in a movie, the reading about some of the behind the scenes stuff in this movie, it cured that for me.
I'm seeing some interesting things in the chat as well. Yeah. Adam, here that, there's some story about Yoda going, to high school with RFB. Not sure what that's all about. And then,
I think it's a little big on RFB.
Oh yeah, maybe. And then Mark Hamill getting bit by a snake.
Yeah, yeah, that happened a good bit, and he actually went to, I forget who the name of the person that did the creatures on that, but you know, they told him no, it wasn't a full on bite, it was a nibble, you know. And Mark's saying, just, well, just, you little, know, that snake opened up its mouth and, yeah, and you know, it bit me, so it's a bite. So
right.
So yeah, filming in Norway was not fun. But then let's the back to tank also after, you know, after the encounter with the Wampa, you know, Mark's in scuba gear in that, and then we see how that looks on film, how, you know, the rest of the room's a little darker, but the tank is lit up. Yeah. So the idea to do that was to have an army searchlight actually, shining on a mirror above the set to illuminate the water. The dogs are barking. The idea behind that was to have an army searchlight with a mirror above the set to illuminate down into the water. There was one day, the heat from the searchlight cracked that mirror and huge shards of glass fell down into the tank.
Jeez.
Kirshner had said, you know, if Mark had been in there, it could have killed him.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're going to get into some issues that this movie had, and that wasn't the least of the issues that this movie had.
Yeah, it sounds like some pretty rough stuff came up.
David Prowse was notorious for leaks, and it's interesting for me. I picture leaks as something that we have to deal with a lot nowadays.
Yeah.
But David Prowse is kind of that one guy that they had to protect story elements from. You know, he would go into interviews and just let little things slip here and there. So they actually started keeping track at one point. Lucasfilm started keeping track of who leaked stuff. Mm-hmm. And they had a scorecard at one point with Harrison Ford having one. Carrie Fisher leaked one. David Prowse at that point leaked 9 already. So they started giving fake pages of scripts to David Prowse so that he wouldn't reveal real plot details. And then,
yeah, that's, you know, interesting that they were doing that sort of thing back then. Cause
yeah,
you know,
we hear that with so like much the age about of internet, but it happened then, you know,
Or like John Boyega leaving his scripts in that apartment or hotel room or whatever it was. Right. I forget.
So then, you know, that led to, the story of, Prowse didn't know about the Vader being Luke's father thing. And actually the line that he read on set.
Thank God he didn't know about that.
I know. The line that he actually read on set was that Obi-Wan had killed Vader's father. Only Luke knew, only Mark Hamill knew that, you know, that line was going to be different. And so he had to react to a line about Vader being his father. But David Prowse was delivering a line in the suit that was going to be changed with voiceovers later with James Earl Jones. So when he saw that, actually, when he saw that in the film previews after the film was done, you know, he was sitting behind Kirshner. He tapped Kirshner on the shoulder and he said, "What?" You know, if I'd have known about this, I would have reacted totally different. I would have acted it out totally differently.
Yeah.
It's
interesting. I think, you know, George Lucas had said only like 3 or 4 people actually knew the real twist, you know, and that Vader was Luke's father.
Yeah. Right. Oh, Megan is saying, I must have messed that up. Obi-Wan killed Luke's father, not Vader's father. I must have said Vader's father. Right, my bad.
Luke's,
All right. I want to talk about a little bit of fun things as we're going to start talking about some problems here in a little bit. The asteroid scene actually has some fun little hidden things. You know, we I don't know if we talked about the kitchen sink back when we talked about Revenge of the Sith. I think we might have too. But over in opening battle, there's a kitchen sink, just because they said, you know, there's everything in this except the kitchen sink. So they added the kitchen. In the asteroid scene, you can see that Ken Ralston told this story. They just kind of wanted to have some fun, so they went out and bought a bag of potatoes, and so they put potatoes in that on the end of sticks, and they flew potatoes around as asteroids. There's also a shoe floating around there. I'll put a picture in the show notes that kind of points some of this stuff out, and then you guys can go back and find it later.
Because I had heard about this before, but I never actually spotted any potatoes.
I didn't find it either, so I had to Google it.
And
luckily, I was able to find something that pointed it out perfectly. So, but yeah,
I'm guessing
it's very quick. It's very quick.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing these potatoes were, you know, not skinned or mashed or anything. They were, you know, in their original state to match the asteroids. I'm guessing.
Yeah. Actors in this movie started talking about blue screen again too, all the way back to 1980, you know, and we were talking about we talked about this so much when we talked about the prequels, but you know, blue screen was a thing for them too, imagining what's happening on the film but not actually being able to see it, so that was a thing back then as well.
Who knew? I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I call this one kind of a fun story, but so first of all, the scene on Bespin where everyone meets Lando for the first time, there was actually a good amount of hangover involved in that scene. And what I mean by that is that the night before, a lot of the cast ended up having a little party with Eric Idle from Monty Python and the Rolling Stones. Eric Idle had just come back from Tunisia, and he brought back a drink that was called a Tunisian table cleaner, which sounds like a Star Wars drink.
Yeah, kind
of does. And so they were up all night that night. But then that kind of almost, I don't want to say it gave some people a reputation, but There was an instance then that Carrie Fisher actually became seriously sick in June of 1979, and then was late the next morning, but because she actually had to go to the hospital, but the crew actually didn't know, and they assumed that she was partying all night. But yeah, there was starting to be a little bit of a reputation there, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
Let's start talking about some of the issues now. June 1st, 1979, second unit director John Barry passed away from meningitis, which was kind of took everybody by surprise. It was quick. He got sick. He collapsed on set one day. Was taken to the hospital, and then he actually passed away not too long after that. Lucas said that he was doing a fantastic job. The film would have been much better if he'd lived, which I thought was an interesting quote.
Yeah.
The carbon freezing.
I had no idea.
Yeah, the carbon freezing chamber was described as like working in a jungle because of how much steam was in there. You know, jets of steam would shoot into people's faces. It was hot. It was miserable. Mm-hmm. The Luke and Vader fight in the carbon freezing chamber. For some of that fight, Vader was played by Bob Anderson, who was a British Olympian and coached the British Olympic fencing team as well. But the conditions for that were pretty terrible. Hamilton said he got dizzy multiple times because of hyperventilating with all the steam. There's slippery surfaces that led to dangerous falls. Because of all that, tempers started to flare. Mark Hamill and Irvin Kershner would get into it a lot. Mark was annoyed about how Kershner would direct him at some points. Kershner would say things like, don't make this face when you're acting, and make a different face. And so, Hamill would say, I didn't make that face. And then it was just back and forth. It wasn't great in that environment. But then Mark actually had some other issues that I wanted to bring up. The week of June 25th, his baby was born at that point, which is cool. Let's see here. So his baby was born at that point. They asked him in. Mark had said he should have left his phone off the hook at that point, because they called him the next morning that he was supposed to be off and asked him to come in and shoot this one scene that they really needed to get done. And it was the scene where Mark is diving out of the way of the AT-AT after getting out of the land speeder. So he comes in to do that. He has to kind of do it over and over again, but he ends up breaking his thumb on one of the shots where he's jumping away. Which led to some issues with Mark and Gary Kurtz. Gary Kurtz was in Mark's dressing room. Mark felt that he should have had someone else do those things for him. So then Gary Kurtz brings in the double, which kind of gets Mark upset again. So Mark is actually driven home pretty angry that week. As I said before, this was the week where Alan Ladd left Fox, so that caused issues. Gary Kurtz later said that he remembered one week where he was sort of, he says, sort of assaulted by everybody. And I think that just means confronted, not actually assaulted.
Right, yeah.
But this was a hard film. Harrison was so relieved when they wrapped on this film that he shot, when he wrapped shooting, he barely said goodbye to anyone when he left. He was just happy to be gone,
Yeah.
Carrie started mentioning nightmares that she would get, where she said she was dreaming of like half men, half robots and things like that. She said when you're doing this movie, you're surrounded by all these strange things, creatures, monsters, robots, all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And it just started kind of creeping into her conscience, And so she would have these terrible nightmares that would get to her. Mark Hamill said, there were lots of times when you say to yourself, I don't care. I hate this movie and everyone in it. I just want to go home.
We know the issues that Mark Hamill had with, your Rian Johnson and Rian's vision for the character. And even with, J.J. Abrams basically leaving him out of the movie, except for the end. And I can see where Mark Hamill is coming from, and I'm a big Mark Hamill fan. I think the ending of The Force Awakens is one of the, I love the literal cliffhanger. I thought it was very powerful that he was actually the story element of him being missing and they're looking for him, and then they finally, and Ray finally finds him. But yeah, this isn't Mark Hamill's first issue with, you know, kind of directors and filmmakers and everything. When it,
yeah, and, you know, we talked about the issues of the, you know, the current cast, everything they went through. It's not fun for them, and it wasn't fun back then, you know.
So yeah, it's a tough process.
Yeah. And then the, you know, I there's problems with the budget again in this one. Even though George was financing a lot of this movie, you know, the budget, to give everyone an idea, started in April of 1978 around $15.5 million. In December of 78, just a, you know, less than a year later, it was up to $21,473,000 and change. The budget then soared past $25 million and got closer to $30 million. And at this point, the bank started getting nervous. The original bank actually said, no, we're done. We're not floating this last $5 million. But George had said that they were, you know, they were about 20% away from finishing this movie at that point. And they didn't know how they were going to make the next payroll. Payroll cost like $1 million. So they weren't quite sure how they were going to make that. They had to go to the Bank of Boston, which was willing to go up to $30 million. And so they, in 10 days, they refinanced the movie. By release, it was clear that Empire would have to make above $57 million to make a profit, which was scary for them because sequels at that point did not historically do as well as their, you know, first movies, right?
Right.
Godfather 2 did way less than Godfather 1. There wasn't a good track record for sequels to do well. And so, you know, they're racking up the budget on this movie. And it was a big question if they would make this money back. But by the time it released in its first week, it brought in $9.6 million. In its first 5 weeks, it made $65 million. By September of 1980, it was at $160 million. So even with all this, though, it's making tons of money. But critical reviews were very mixed. The critics were saying some of it didn't quite live up to Star Wars. Still a fun movie, but didn't quite live up to it. Maui News wrote about people, you know, booing and jeering 15 minutes before the end, and, you know, wouldn't leave until they got refunded. It was mixed, to say the least.
Sounds somewhat familiar.
Doesn't it? Right?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't really realize it was that mixed. Like,
right. Right.
But, you know, we know The Last Jedi was very much split down the middle. I think sometimes they're, you know, it's hard to tell what the majority of fans think of the film. But at least on Rotten Tomatoes and the user scores and everything, hanging around at 50 something percent there. And obviously The Empire Strikes Back aged well, and over time it was received much better. And you wonder if The Last Jedi might have that same sort of aspect to it of aging well.
Good. RFB is in chat, and he's saying that he remembers back then. A lot of people not liking this story. History repeating itself. So very, very true.
Yep.
I loved this fact, but before the film started going widespread in 35 millimeter, George made some changes to the film. He wanted three more shots added to the film in 35 millimeter, which were, I think, some of the shots at the end with the medical cruiser, with frigate, I believe.
Yeah.
Started tinkering in 1980 and hasn't stopped since.
Yep.
So, you know, post Empire coming out, Mark Hamill gave this quote, and I thought this was very funny. He said, George tells me that the wisest thing I could tell anyone is that I'm retired. Then I would have the best of both worlds. There's no pressure to put out a product. And if you do get a part, you can say the role was so good, it lured me out of retirement. Mm-hmm. Who knows? I think he's probably right.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because, you know, you didn't see a whole lot out of Mark Hamill for a long period of time there.
Right. You know? Right. Mm-hmm. I kind of, in my mind, brought that back to today. There's so much speculation about what will happen with the current cast, if we'll ever see them again. Mm-hmm. You know, Oscar Isaac has said some things about coming back and all that other stuff, but mm-hmm. it would be so much easier on them personally if they could just say something like that, you know, I'm stepping away.
Yeah.
It was fun, but I'm stepping away, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think at the very least they feel the need to step away from Star Wars for right now so they can, you know, work on other things, but there's always that possibility that they could come back years down the road. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I know that Daisy Ridley and John Boyega and Oscar Isaac they're out there listening. So there's some words of wisdom from George Lucas for you guys. So take it. Mm-hmm. And then I want to talk about some speculation, some post-Empire speculation back then. Many thought that the Emperor was a clone of Obi-Wan that had gone wrong.
Huh. So there were theories and speculations even back then.
Yeah. Mark Hamill said himself, this was really interesting, but Mark Hamill said, ultimately the Emperor should be the main bad guy. Someone you try to get through the 9 movies, and in the 9th, you succeed.
That's fascinating. Isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that fascinating? I thought that was incredible when I read that. Yeah, I had to read that 2 or 3 times to make sure I read that right. I'm like, dude, wait, mm-hmm. nine? Because
nine. Yeah.
Ultimately, the Emperor should be the main bad guy, someone you try to get through the 9 movies, and then in the 9th, you succeed.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Very, very interesting.
I was very happy that you said something about people not believing that Luke was Vader's father earlier. Kirstner mm-hmm. said he did his own little study, and he actually said that he found that children didn't believe that Vader was Luke's father and that he was lying. And mm-hmm. he said that ages 7 and up tended to believe it, but it was very chilling thing for them.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And like with Sydney, I mean, she's 3 years old right now, so she's not ready to really watch all these Star Wars movies. Yeah, but and I don't know if there's any way I can shield her from knowing about Vader
and
who he is before her watching these movies. But like, I'm so curious that like what she would think of them the first time, and I'd show them to her probably in like release order, you know what I mean? And just see like, just see what her reaction is. I'm so curious about fans out there who don't know this stuff watching it for the first time now. You know what I mean? Yeah. What that would be like.
It's hard to escape that because it's such a pop culture thing, you know? And I think we'll leave it here. Okay. RFB said he was 13 back then. He believed it. I don't know what this says about me, but I didn't believe Kylo Ren when he told her I was 32 at that point.
Yeah.
I didn't believe Kylo Ren when he said Rey was a nobody.
I didn't believe him either. I'm like, I know there's more to this. I know there's more to her.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Same.
Well, RFB. Okay. Yeah. He said he also read the book before he saw it. So that helps a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Force of Light says Daisy is coming back. Give it 10 years. I agree. I actually think it's going to be less than 10 years.
Yeah, I hope so, because I really want to see Rey, you know, training that next generation of Jedi and wielding that yellow saber. You know, I'd love to see that. I'd love to see.
I don't think that we'll ever
see Finn return.
Yeah, I don't know that we'll see Oscar Isaac back. I really don't think.
Yeah, I don't.
I think he's done.
Right.
But so. I do think that Daisy will be back.
Yeah, I really want to see a continuation of that story at some point.
Right. So as we know, Han ends up in, you know, carbon froze. He's in perfect hibernation. But it ended really that way because we weren't sure if Harrison would be back. And I know
he wanted his character to be kind of
right.
a sacrifice, you know, to give impact to the story and everything. And
But I'm going to leave this week's discussion right here and say that in August of 1980, Harrison Ford agrees to play Han Solo, quote unquote, one more time.
One more time.
All right, so that's where we'll wrap up. Thank the maker for Empire Strikes Back. And next week we'll pick it up with Return of the Jedi.
All right, Adam, get us out of here.
I'm just glad you're here. At the end.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in today. In chat, I saw Bob's Adventures, Blogs, and More, Dale Erdman, Cat, Vader's Girl 28, 2Med2, RFB, Rez, Charlie Skywalker, Megan Rickards, Cam Ray, Stephen Miller, Force of Light Entertainment, and Isn't That Just Jumped In. We want to say hi to them. If I missed everyone, I am sorry, but thank you very much for hanging out. We're so glad to see everyone today. Remember to subscribe on your favorite podcatcher or podcast app. Remind you all, today we are recording on Pod Review Day, which is a Twitter thing, and I'll bring this up right now. We started a new giveaway this week.
This is an exciting giveaway.
Yeah, we reached 600 Twitter followers this week. And just happened, I planned this a little bit. But since today is Pod Review Day, this giveaway, all you have to do is give us a review. You can go, if you have iTunes, if you don't use iTunes, you can download it for free on your PC and give us a review that way. If you don't have an iPhone or access to a PC, you can also just go to podchaser.com/certainPOVpod. We are on there. You can leave us a review there and follow us and listen to all of it too, which it's a pretty cool site. Just check it out. But up until August 14th, all you got to do is leave us a review. Send us a screenshot of your review with a hashtag FACPOV600 in honor of our 600 Twitter followers. And on August 15th, which is a week from today when we're recording this, we'll announce our winner live on YouTube. The prize for this is going to be this awesome. Let's see if I can get it on camera here. Back up. It's this awesome LP from Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. The text is flipped around for me there, but it does say Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, just backwards. So that's the front. And here's the back. So some nice promo art from Galaxy's Edge.
Yeah, that's a thing of beauty right there.
This is open. This is my copy. The winning copy will be brand new, sealed, unopened. And then this is the LP itself. It's printed also. And both sides has the Galaxy's Edge Symphonic Suite by John Williams. So next week we'll be giving that away. So make sure you get your reviews in before August 14th, and you'll be entered into the giveaway for that. It's pretty cool. And thanks everyone in chat for the congrats. That's awesome. We're super happy about that.
For sure, yeah, and I would love to win that. You know, Cam tempted me earlier this week, you know, to just use another handle
Cam
or something.
Accused
to try
me
to...
of cheating on his polls.
Oh man,
how dare he! Anyway, remember to check out the website. I know, right? The nerve. Check out the website from a certain point of view.com. There's blog articles there. You can send us questions on the show. There's links to everything, including Podchaser and iTunes. Socials, Twitter is certain POV pod. Facebook is From a Certain Point of View. Discord server links are in the show notes and on the website. email is certainpovpod@gmail.com, and we are hosted by Anchor, where you can send us a 60-second voicemail. Remember to check out the Red 5 Network. There's a ton of great podcasts on there. I mentioned Force of Light that was in chat today. I was also hanging out with Force Losers last week. Last night, we were just kind of having a cool Red 5 Network hangout night. And Pod Wars and Salty Nerd, Scare of Scuttlebutt, Conversations, and me from our show, we were all represented there. So it's a great network, a lot of fun people to hang out with, and a lot of great shows. So check out red5network.com. You can find me on Twitter is the best place, @TheGauze85. And Josh, where can they find you?
You can also find me on Twitter @JediJarJar1722 and occasionally writing articles for Star Wars News Net. And it's been a blast today. We thank you so much for joining us live or listening later. And we want to once again thank the makers of The Empire Strikes Back this week. And without the makers, we wouldn't have a show. So thank you guys out there, and we will see you again soon. And until next week, everything we said today was true.
From a certain point of view.